Good people of St. Wenceslas, I have some good news for you this morning. After next weekend, so beginning essentially with Lent, throughout the diocese, the different restrictions that have been put in place, a number of them are going to be changing. And so I want to share those with you, going through what those changes will be. Some of them are going to apply to you, other ones, I just want to let you know what they are. And then a couple other things that still won't be changing as well. So the first thing, those lovely barricades that get knocked down every now and then throughout Mass, get ready to say goodbye to them, okay? Those are going. They'll be eliminated altogether. Funeral vigils and visitations before Mass may be here in the church again at the pastor's discretion. Extraordinary ministers of the Eucharist may begin again at the pastor's discretion as well. We'll be using those just in a very simple way, perhaps at the Saturday evening Mass where we usually don't have a deacon, and then in the Masses where the choir is singing as well to bring there. But the extraordinary ministers of the Eucharist will begin, as well as having multiple servers for Mass as well, will begin with the pastor's discretion and the permission of the parents. Choir for parish Masses may resume with their usual numbers. Holy water. One of the beautiful things, actually, that has happened over this time is this sense in which people coming in and out of the church will still, almost on instinct, or just a desire for the holy water, still go over and reach into the holy water font where it is and cross themselves. Well, beginning with Lent, there'll be holy water back in those founts as well. And then communal penance services. You know, for Advent and Lent, we usually have a communal penance service here in town. Those will be possible now as well. A couple things which won't be changing. We'll still just be having communion under one species of the sacred hosts, so no precious blood. The sign of peace will remain suspended, and there'll be no offertory procession with someone bringing up the gifts. And then the last thing is what I want to say just a word about this morning is that the bishop is as well reestablishing the Sunday obligation for Mass. Now, I wasn't here at St. Wenceslas 11 months ago when COVID hit. Can you believe it's been almost a full year when Masses were suspended altogether for a short time? I also wasn't here when they began again with the restrictions that are now being lifted. And so if you've heard this back then, 9 months ago, I'm sorry, but I wasn't here. But I want to speak just a word about it because it's important. And when we're speaking about the Sunday obligation, at this point in the church with where we're at, you guys, for the most part, almost entirely, you're here because you choose to be. I think there are very few people anymore who come just because I know I need to go. You guys are here because you choose to be. But I want to speak a little bit deeper into that Sunday obligation, because I'm sure you have people in your own lives, maybe your own families as well, who ask you about it. And to be able to give a reason for what we believe and what we do as well. And also to speak a little bit about some important points with this. First, an important point, and this is something that has never changed. If you're sick, it's not a sin to stay at home. If you're sick, it's never been the case that if you're sick, that it's been a sin if you missed Mass. When I was a small child, we used to every now and then go up to my aunt and uncle's place, Dennis and Connie, up in a little rural town in northeastern Montana. And there was one time I got a really bad fever. I was about 7 years old, and I had it, and it broke that Saturday night into Sunday. And I remember because, do you guys remember the kiwi strawberry Shasta Pop? Oh, they were the best. Ice cold ones, and my aunt laid them over my face so I could help cool down and I'd drink them. But I was dead sick. And there was this one Mass in the small town, and 2-3 hours away was the next one. And so my aunt took care of me that morning. I didn't go to Mass, and she didn't because she was taking care of me, wasn't able to go either. that wasn't a sin. But even in the instance when you're not able to go to Mass, it doesn't change the commandment to keep holy the Sabbath day. You remember this even when Masses were suspended, that to keep holy the Sabbath day. And so my Aunt Connie prayed the rosary with me, and she read the readings of the Mass as well. We didn't have back then live streaming Masses or Masses on TV that you could even watch. That will be one thing which will continue, because there are people who are sick within the parish, and there is as well those who are genuinely high risk. And this is a genuine matter of conscience. That word conscience has been abused a number of times in the last half century of the church. But this instance is actually one where it really applies. That someone who has a well-formed conscience, they know internally, and they know from the voice of God when they're sick and they should not go. They also know when they are themselves high risk or someone within their family that they're with. And a matter of conscience is one in which it's painful for you not to be there. There's people who join us each Mass, each 9:30 Mass this Sunday, and they join us and they join in the prayers and the Eucharist, and it's painful to not be here. And it is meant to be painful, because you long to be able to be here and to receive Jesus physically. And it's painful for us not to have you here. But that's what a matter of conscience is. Someone who's longing for something, but they know as a matter of prudence, I shouldn't, because I'm really sick or high risk. That's a matter of conscience as opposed to a matter of convenience. We know the difference, right? Sunday mornings, great time to go hunting with my buddies. We're on vacation, we're at the lake house for the weekend. And isn't this convenient? Come in from the lake, we'll turn on Mass. That's a matter of convenience. Different deal altogether. But the most important point, everyone, with the Mass obligation is what it is about at its very foundation is it's about our relationship and union with God. It's about our relationship with Jesus as opposed to a legalistic rule. When I was younger, I had a real legalistic mindset. So I knew, well, if I miss Sunday Mass, I'll just go to confession. That's not the worst mindset, beside the fact that it's presumption. It's not the worst. At least I recognize that instead of saying, well, it doesn't matter at all anyway. It's not the worst mindset, but it's super, super shallow. In which the faith, the Mass obligation, and even confession becomes very externalized. I broke this external rule, and now I'm going to go do this external thing, and none of it goes actually deep with what Jesus wants to do there. Do you find it funny in the gospel today even that Jesus, he's been healing people and casting out evil spirits from them, and they're coming in hordes to him from this town, and he says, oh, everyone's looking for me? I got to go to this other town. Why is that? One of the dangers is the danger that Jesus just becomes a miracle machine. That he just becomes this miracle machine, and he knew that this was a danger in the human heart. That, not so much anymore, but you remember the days when there was a little ice cream truck coming and you hear the music? The kids would run to the music, get their ice cream, they're so happy, and they run away. That the risk when our faith becomes something where it's just external rather than something much, much deeper is I go to Jesus when I have this external problem. Jesus, heal my leg. Come on. Oh, thanks, Jesus. And then I run away. Jesus, I have this problem, and I come to him with this external problem, and then he heals it. Grace happens, but it doesn't actually change anything within me. Think of the lepers who were healed and only the one returned. Jesus is after something so much deeper here. What Jesus is after is the heart. Every healing, every casting out of evil spirits is pointing to something deeper that he wants to do within us. This is something in which he wants to heal our heart because he knows that if he has that, then he has everything else. But in a legalistic mindset like the one I used to have, it's, well, it's just this external stuff, and maybe you guys have heard this before as well. I don't have to go to Mass to be a good person. Folks, Christianity is not primarily about being a good person. It's not. Christianity is not primarily about being a good person. That's a fruit that's meant to come from what Christianity is primarily about, which is about being with God, being united with him. And that's what we do here, is we come here to worship God and to receive him. We come here to worship him, and this is an act of humility on our part, that we recognize at the very depth of our being, I need God. This is Job. Job is a man, a just man, who had his whole life crashed down and everything was taken from him. But what you don't see here is that Job, and why he's held up in the Old Testament, is because he never cursed God. He continued to praise God, even in the midst of despair. We come, we worship God when our life is going through hell. We come and we worship God when everything is going amazing. In my life, in my family, my career, we come and we humble ourselves and say, I need him every single week. That's our humility. And then we come to receive him, which is God's humility. He comes in this form of a small piece of bread. And he comes so that we can be with God. We receive him, his body and blood, into our body and blood. There's no more of an intimate union with him than that. That's what we do here so that we can then go out and love him in what we do. We go out so that we're able then to serve him in others. Simon's mother-in-law, she's healed. What's the first thing she does? She gets up and she serves them. We come here and we receive healing so that we're then able to serve and live the Christian life. This is the incredible gift that we have here in the Eucharist. It's a gift that we have when millions of Catholics don't have access to it. And so this Sunday obligation is pointing us always to that gift, and it points to something deeper. So that we can serve him and do so with joy. We can do so with a generosity of heart, and we can do so with gratitude. This is the grace, this is the gift we have. Praise God for it.